it's important to understand that these things, this background, this build up to the actual creation of the product is what determines your likelihood of success, both with the product and the initial launch. Quality of the product and the demand for it is going to determine your ability to get affiliates, your ability to maintain a long-term strong conversion rate, all of the things that determine a business's viability. Instead of making it an event, you're developing a business. Now let's get into some of the more specific things. Okay, you've got your product, you've got your list, now you're ready for what most people think of when they think of the launch. What's your next move?
Well, and actually, you know, the first inkling that people have that something's coming is what I just mentioned right before we took our break, is, you know, I'll typically send out something that says, we're almost done with the product, but we have time to fit in a few last minute suggestions, so we just want to make sure we cover everything. So what are the top things we need to cover? What are your top questions? What are the top burning desires here within this topic? What is absolutely mission critical that we cover? So you're asking your list this, and they're giving you a response, but this is the first time they know for sure that something's coming. You know, before this, you might have mentioned things here and there when you published to them. You know, when you did those surveys, they had an inkling something's coming. You know, people are smart. They know something's coming. But this is the first time that's absolutely concrete that they know something's coming. What you're doing here is you're just starting to build a little anticipation. You're doing a lot of the things we already talked about. You're building up. You're getting them invested in the process. You're letting them know that the product's going to be very focused on them. You're building up that reciprocity. But you've also, this is the first salvo, the first shot across the bow that, yes, something is definitely coming. And this will prick people's ears up. And it's a way of doing it without sending a promotional message. You're just sending a message, you know, because you're concerned that you want to make sure you cover everything. You know, it's not seen as a promotional message, but it really is. It's the start of the pre-launch process.
And that makes a lot of sense. You get people involved. It's sort of like, you know, Alex always likes to use the, you know, first you got to get the shy yes and then the date before you propose type of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the first hint that you're thinking of asking her out.
Mm-hmm.
Or him for the ladies in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they know it's coming, what process do you, I know the one that I use, what process do you recommend for building anticipation for the product itself?
Basically, I mean, anticipation, I mean, what you did there is the first step of anticipation. And anticipation is a really key thing. I mean, it's building up for Christmas morning. You know, it's building up for the Easter Bunny.
No, we want to keep him out.
Yeah, that's right.
He's the one who's eating the tomato.
Right. You know, it's building up for that last day of school. You know, there's all kinds of things we anticipate. You know, getting your first car, getting your first bicycle. Basically, what you're doing is you're gradually releasing more and more information about the product. You're also showing your excitement, because excitement is contagious. You put two people and you get them talking excitedly about something and they will draw a crowd. Don't be afraid to show your excitement. Oh man, that, you know, the product, I finally wrapped this thing up. I am so excited. It's sent it off to the proofreaders. You're going to love this product. I cannot believe I put so much into this. I was able to pack so much into it, and this is absolutely going to solve your problem to keep those rabbits away from your plants. Then you start to show them the excitement that other readers have. If other readers write in and say, oh boy, Paul, I almost gave up on tomatoes because I just cannot keep rabbits out of my tomatoes. But now that I've heard you've got this book coming out, I am so excited. You know, I can't wait to get that thing. And so when people start, and if you're doing this right, you'll start to get those kind of emails. And then you have to publish those emails back. You have to say, boy, look at this email I just received from Frank in Peoria. You know, he can't wait to get this product. He's almost as excited as I am. So you're modeling this anticipation, this excitement. You're letting them know they should be, you know, excited about it. That can carry you a long way in the whole anticipation.
Again, it comes back to the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular types of messages that you find to be more productive than others?
Well, one thing I like to do is I like mixed mediums, or mixed media, I guess. And so I like to send them email. I also like to use like screen capture software like Camtasia to put together videos. I like to use audios like audio postcards. You can use teleseminars. You can use blogs. Blogs are a great one that's been very powerful lately. And so I like to hit people with different ways of sending, you know, getting my message. Some people respond more to an audio message, and some will respond more to a video message. Some like email, some like reading words on a web page. Some people love blogs. So I like to mix these things up. And in here, what I start to do is I start to answer objections. You know, if I know, you know, there's a certain type of bunny that people are having a real trouble with, I'll start talking about, and that's their biggest objection. Yeah, it's easy to get rid of all those other kinds of rabbits, but that desert
evil,
hare,
horrible vampire bunny.
Right, exactly. That one, you know, no one can deal with. So I'll talk about that, and I'll spend an email or a blog post dealing with that specific objection. And I'll go from objection to objection. The other thing, too, is as you get closer to your launch, the frequency starts to increase. Like if we're doing a big launch, if we're planning this out 4 weeks in advance, that first tease that, oh yeah, we're almost ready, send us your questions, that might come out 4 weeks in advance. And then maybe if you give them 5 to 7 days before your next email. And then it's only like 4 to 6 days before the next one. And then it's only, you know, 3 to 5 days, and they get closer and closer until that last week. They're getting something from you almost every single day. This is one key thing I want to stress is I've talked to a lot of people that bought my product launch formula course have had some great success with their launches. And I've actually done case studies with a bunch of them. I think I'm up to about 9 or 10 of these. There's two overriding themes that I keep on hearing from them. And one is that they can't wait to do their next product launch because after you do one, it's almost addicting when you see how effective this is. And every single one of them to a T is like they have like 2 or 3 more planned. It's like, I can't wait till the next one. And the other thing is I always ask them, what does this do to your relationship with your list? Every single one of them has said, it's actually improved my relationship. If you do this properly and you're really telling a story and you're keeping it entertaining, even though you're greatly increasing the frequency you're mailing to your list, you actually, on balance, will improve your relationship with your list.
Well, it's like having a conversation with someone when they get very excited and both of you are talking faster and faster and there's more energy in the conversation. That's not the sort of thing, unless you're arguing, which you never want to do in this type of a process.
Right.
Other than that, it's not the sort of thing that people object to. They enjoy it. It adds energy and life to what's going on. That's something that a lot of people, they think of these, you see it a lot on like the Warrior Forum and various other places. People say, oh, these product launches are this and that and they're all this nasty stuff and it's all just manipulation to separate people from their money. And they're not paying attention. If you're doing what you've described, you're asking people what their problems are, how they want those problems solved, which are the most important problems to solve. And by the time you're done, you're giving them exactly the answer that they asked for. That's not manipulation.
Nope.
Obviously, there's a lot of sales techniques and stuff that go into this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when I hear somebody saying, you know, a big product launch is some sort of negative thing,
mm-hmm.
Now there may be techniques that are used that are not so cool. But for the most part, when you see a successful product launch, it's solving a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Right.
And that's something that, like you mentioned that early on, you felt that you had to give a lot in advance before you could ask for money.
Right.
And that's never a bad thing. Realistically, if you're solving a problem, people are happy to pay you. If you don't believe that, you should see the number of people when every time I send out an issue of my newsletter with an article in it, or how-to tips, or something like that. The number of people who go to that buy Paul a beer thing
mm-hmm.
and send me money. And they didn't have to. This is after they got it for free. If you solve problems for people, they are thrilled to pay you for that.
Right.
They're happy to because, it's like nobody ever complains about the price of aspirin. Think about that, folks. No one ever complains about the price of aspirin. They complain about the price of cable TV, of orange juice. They complain about the price of gasoline. No one ever complains about the price of aspirin. You cure their headache, a real genuine pain, or you give them the big rose and they're thrilled with you.
Right.
There's all the stuff in the middle where you become a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're fixing a problem or you're giving somebody their heart's content, don't be shy about asking for money because they don't mind it.
Paul, I gotta tell you something. I can't believe I forgot to mention this because it made my month. It just clicked that I forgot to mention this when I talked about the case studies I've done. Because last week, I think it was last Wednesday. Yep, it was Wednesday. One of my students launched a product. And, her name was Liz Sherwood. And Liz is actually, like, when I launched my product, one of the techniques that I did when I launched my product to create a frenzy was I had certain bonuses that went away if you didn't act right away. And I also had certain bonuses that just the very few first people that ordered got. One of those things was a consultation, a 30-minute consultation with me. I think the first 20 or 30 people that bought got that. And like we talked about, you know, it's a crazy number, but if people want to get me on the phone, it is $1,500 an hour. That's what I charge. And so this bonus was worth like $750 if it's 30 minutes. And Liz was one of the first 30 people or 20 people or whatever. And so she bought my course. She got this consultation with me. So I got to know Liz a little bit, and turns out Liz has been a minister for 8 years. She recently had a baby, and she really loves her ministry, but she wants to stay home with her baby. So she basically wants to retire at least for some period of time from being a minister. Liz hasn't had a business. From what I can tell, super entrepreneurial because she's, you know, it's just...
You wouldn't know she wasn't from the package that she sent out. This is the Ad Gold Rush package?
Yes.
I got that. I feel bad because I didn't get back to her.
Right. Yeah, it was... Yeah.
Very professional joint venture presentation.
Especially the candy.
That was sweet, if you'll pardon the pun.
Mm-hmm.
That was, for people that didn't get that, it was a black binder with a very nice label on the front, a personally addressed letter inside, along with a printed explanation of the joint venture proposal, a copy of the product in a DVD-type case with a nice professional-looking cover. The product is called Ad Gold Rush, and it's an AdSense product.
Mm-hmm.
Along with it was wrapped up in this nice, fine mesh, a bunch of gold foil-wrapped chocolates.
That lasted about 10 minutes in my house.
I don't know how long they lasted here, but it wasn't the whole evening.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice presentation.
Right.
I meant to tell Liz there's only one E in my last name, but other than that, it was great.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, she did. She put together a nice product. She positioned it well. And like I said, Liz is a researcher. And so she was smart enough to get my product, but not only get my product, but jump on it right away and get that little bonus consultation. And she also got some help from Yannick Silver in the same type of thing where she somehow finagled a little bit of time with him. And I know he helped her with some of the positioning of the product and I think maybe a headline for the product. And, you know, I helped her with the launch strategy. Here we have someone who's really not an entrepreneur, who is selling into the internet marketing world, which is, you know, in my opinion, the most competitive market there is.
Well, other than porn and dating, you're probably right on the money.
Yeah, and even there, I think there's elements that make it harder to succeed in. Not across the board, but there's certain quirks in this internet marketing space.
Oh, yeah, there's like some 20 or 30% of the people in this market would eat their own young for 12 extra visitors a day.
Right. So, but the thing is like, you know, since I talked to Liz on the phone, I could just identify with her so much because I already told you a little bit about my story of being home with the kids. My wife wanted to be home. And I could just hear how desperately Liz wanted to be home. And I just wanted it to work for her so well. And so she launched Wednesday at noon. And she had, it's a monthly club that cost $287, and she had 197 of them to sell. That's it. She was going to sell 197, and that was it. And this is a scarcity play. And I don't use that word play negatively, but I mean, there's reasons why she limited that I mean, there's good reasons.
Yeah, when you start talking about this type of product, there has to be.
Right.
Right.
But in addition, that created scarcity, which is another mental trigger that causes people to act. So anyways, this is what I'm so excited about, is she sold out in 30 hours.
100. Wow.
That is a monthly revenue stream of $58,000.
Okay, now let's go over this briefly here, guys. We're talking about a person who has been around the internet marketing game, at least in terms of reading things and learning,
mm-hmm.
for quite a while. Liz Sherwood is not new to it in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of her ever having had a product of her own before. Has she?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at this, and I have the case in my hand. And looking at the back of this, if you're going to play in the AdSense arena, this is a hot product. And she did it because she's been reading and studying, and she's a researcher and a minister. Now, anybody can learn at least, the basics of those skills. Being a minister requires a certain commitment that goes beyond just learning how to do with search engine stuff. And there's a lot of counseling and consulting and things that you have to do, and you have to have a certain level of empathy that, frankly, most of us don't have. But this is not a person that most people would expect to be making $50,000+ a month on a launch.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the product that she sent me, I have very little doubt that the people who signed up are going to get their money's worth.
Right.
This is hot stuff.
Right.
And it's very well put together. It's very clear. So, what would it be worth to you, people that are listening to this, to put something like that together that makes $58,000 a month, or $54,000, whatever the number was?
Well, it's 58 gross. I mean, she had partners who promoted for her, and so, but even, I did the math.
Let's assume it was half, and you take 10% off her processing fees, you're still looking at $25,000 a month?
Yeah.
That's not bad. $300,000 a year.
Right. And this is, I doubt if there's a day goes by that someone doesn't release some AdSense product into the market. And 99% of those come and they go, and no one even knows they ever happened. They don't even know they exist. Maybe a few of them actually do make a few sales. Or, someone will go on the Warrior Forum and do one of those special offers and offer it for like $4, you can get the whole thing, I mean, that's what the AdSense products are like. It's almost like water. That's how, and they are. They're so cheap. Most of them, even $29 would be a really expensive package.
And most of the ones that are cheap are worth what you're paying for.
Right, right. But I mean, it's like, but every day someone releases one of these. And nothing happens. They don't make any sales. No one ever hears about them. On and on and on. Here, Liz, puts one together. She gets top-notch coaching. She spends the money, gets my course. She spends the money, gets some coaching from Yannick. She is a good researcher. She does her research, figures out how to get some extra bonus consulting. But really, nails it. Just does it. Cookie cutter. I mean, her launch was a cookie cutter launch. I mean, it was just straight out of my course. It was a cookie cutter. She comes out with a launch, and what does she do? She has instant momentum and instant business because she did the launch properly. She put together the product properly. She got the kind of feedback she needed. And bingo. And the other thing too is, she set up, now this thing's sold out. There's people hitting her website that want it. They can't get it. She's now set up for the relaunch.
She has positioned herself, too, and this is something that when you start out, if you're unsure of yourself, you may want to start with a low-cost product just out of fear,
mm-hmm.
or as a learning experience,
yeah.
Pay yourself while you learn.
Right.
But there's a couple of things that Liz has done here that you'll hear all the experts saying, do this, and lots of people saying, I don't know how, I can't, there's too many people doing it, whatever. First thing she did was went with a small number of people at a high price. If you're really going to put out a quality product, and you're talking something like this, $297 a month is nothing for 12 niches, 12 high-profit niches analyzed each month. That's the top thing. 240 original keyword optimized articles each month. If you get people properly using this material, you're looking at what, Jeff? Probably $20, $30, $40 a day off of each month's worth of material, or even if it's just 10.
Mm-hmm.
Your first month, you've made back what you spent.
Mm-hmm.
Every month after that, $10 a day, wow, that's pretty good.
Great.
End of a year, you've made 12 times your investment back for each month, and it's ongoing. So she came up with a way that people will reasonably justify and explain to themselves, yes, this really will make me money that will keep coming in, and I'm building myself a nice little annuity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if these people are smart, they're including list-building techniques in these AdSense sites.
Right.
But if they're not, even if they're not, you're looking at a really well-strategized product. She's a person with no name recognition.
No connections.
No connections. She's going into one of the toughest markets right now. And by putting together an intelligent plan with the right kind of pricing, people know if you're going to do AdSense materials properly, it's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it in a way that if she lost half of her subscribers the first month, which of course I doubt she will have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is some nice looking material. If she lost half of them in the first month, she still got a very nice income and can go to these other people who are on her waiting list and let them in. And if she lost half of those, well, now she's at three quarters. You know, it's just a very intelligent plan.
Right.
And I have to admit that I was somewhat put off by the fact that she misspelled my last name. It's sort of a peeve for me because the only way people ever see it is when they see how I spell it.
Mm-hmm.
But the only mistake in the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really nice. It was just very well done.
Right.
And if she hadn't hit me while I was in the middle of 16 dozen other things, including going, you know, 6-hour round trip up to Buffalo for a pet that we had at the hospital, I have very little doubt that I would have plugged this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great looking product.
Yep.
This is the classic Cinderella story. No name, no connections, no list, no professional background indicating that she should have any real success at this, except that she's good at research.
Right.
Yeah. If that doesn't motivate you, what will?
Yeah, it's another one of those where the number is so big and the success is so outrageous and just out of nowhere that I almost hesitate to talk about it because people say, no, you couldn't possibly. I mean, $58,000 a month, and you know, and I did the math.
$696,000 a year gross.
Yeah, and the net, I know the numbers pretty well. Since I was involved, I think we're looking at easily a $30,000 net. And so, yeah, she could lose 2/3 of her people. And say she didn't replace any of them, and she's still looking at $10,000 a month. And I don't care who you are, $10,000 a month changes your life.
And you can raise your kid in good style on, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 a month.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, $30,000 a month—that's over a third of $1 million.
Yep. Yeah. But I tell you, I was just like on cloud nine for the last few days, just. I'm so thrilled because, like I said, well, for all the reasons you said, it's a Cinderella story. And in talking to her, I knew how desperately she wanted to be home with her baby.
And she took, how does Tony Robbins put it? She took massive action.
Yeah, she did. She did. And now she's got massive action. Just she's got so many clients, shipping a product out to all those clients. But she's pretty happy.
Oh yeah, that's a problem that we all want to avoid.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Let's say you're a college student or somebody who's in a job that they just hate and you want to achieve that same level of success.
Mm-hmm.
With that kind of example for people and they really want to do something like this, what are the things that separate, in your experience, the people who are successful and the people who flop, and what specific steps would you recommend that these people take if they really want to achieve that level of success?
Oh, boy. Well, I think the number one thing is to take action. And then the number two thing is to take intelligent action. And
yeah, don't wait for number two, folks. If you take action and it's not suicidal, you can adjust your course.
Right. Yeah. That's a key point, because say you have an objective, and say anyone with any objective whatsoever, say it's like to install a home theater system. You know, no one ever goes straight from point A, which is you're sitting there with an unopened box on the floor of your home entertainment, wherever it's going to get installed. You got four boxes and they're not opened. And then the end result is you sitting there watching a movie with this incredible surround sound and this fantastic picture. So there's point, you know, your beginning point, your end point. No one ever goes on the absolute most efficient path in the world between those two points. You're always, you know, say you gotta head straight north. Well, you never head straight north. You head in that northerly direction, and then you'll make a correction. And then you'll go a little ways in that direction, and then you'll make a correction. You'll keep on making more and more corrections until you finally get there. No one ever goes from problem to solution, from point A to point B in a perfectly straight line. You're always making corrections all along the way. So yeah, you don't expect it to be perfect. Expect to screw up. Expect to make mistakes. Just start taking the action. I keep on going back. It's to have a product that your market wants. And the way you get that is through the conversation with the market. And then you need that group of raving fans. And once you have those, you know, once you have the raving fans, then you can figure out what the market wants, and then you just create it. You give it to them. And you just can't go wrong that way. Unless you pick a bad market. And sort of like the stuff we talked about earlier in the call, it tells you, I mean, that's all about, you know, finding the market in an inexpensive way. Inexpensive both in time and money. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Don't worry about coming up with a completely unique product. You know, I sold for 9 or 10 years a newsletter about investing in the stock market. Well, you know, there's approximately a bazillion newsletters about investing in the stock market. That did stop me. You don't need a unique product. You just need a group of raving fans to tell you exactly how to define your product. It's fantastic if you got 1,000 competitors. That doesn't matter. So don't worry about inventing some new paradigm for doing business. Don't worry about inventing some completely new process to do anything. I mean, just worry about building a better mousetrap. Just build a different mousetrap. And let the mousetrap be defined by the people in your target market.
I have a different approach to picking the market. You're familiar with that one. The important thing is, no matter what you're doing, whether you build the list first and then find out what they want, or you decide what type of thing you want to do, find out where these people are online, go out and find the prospects you're looking for, and then find the specifics of the product. However you go after it, the key that you keep going back to, I sum up in the one word, listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's active listening. And if you keep doing that until you find out what's, and now we're back again to the pain thing. Find out what hurts, you can't lose.
Right.
But if you don't get off your butt and move and do something, and Jeff knows I'm famous for not getting off my butt.
Mm-hmm.
I've got literally three dozen product outlines of partially finished products in here because I have attention deficit disorder, or as we dyslexics like to say, dad. If you get moving and let them, while you're listening, that will cause your adjustment. Let them tell you when you're going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If you let them tell you which direction they want you to go in the first place, the adjustments will be. Or if you find out there's no money in it, worst possible thing you can do, pick a market that has no money or that won't spend it.
Right.
Liz picked a very spendy market. These people know I get a site up, it makes me money every month, they'll spend the money.
Yep.
Because they know what the return is.
Yep.
Absolutely, one of the worst things you can do is go after, for example, newbie internet marketers. Everybody wants to do that because they're new and they figure they can stay just ahead of everybody else. Well, most of these people have no money. The ones who have money are being attracted by people with more experience.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go after flea market buyers. People who shop at flea markets, who only buy groceries at Aldi's. I don't know. Not everybody has Aldi's probably, so it's a very discount grocers. They have great food. They have great quality. But the fact is, it's a very inexpensive place to shop. People who only buy at flea markets. People who...
Mm-hmm.
live in trailers, beat up old mobile homes, not the nice new ones. They live in beat up old mobile homes. They're the typical trailer park image that you'll see. Don't pick those markets. Don't go for the discount market. You will go broke.
Yep. It's funny. You hear people say, oh man, I've got a list, my niche. These people don't like this, they won't pay for things. They want free things, or along that line. Like, you picked them.
Either that or you trained them not to buy from you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, there are reasons that you might want to run a list where you don't train people to buy from you or to expect some sort of sales offer, and you can actually do pretty well with them if you have a good strategy. But people are cutting their throats for free. They're cutting their own throats for free. They give away too much for free, or they don't give away enough, and then they try to sell, and it's insane.
Yeah. One other thing, we've sort of talked about relationship. I mean, I'm a big fan, you are too, of having a relationship with your list. It does an incredible number of good things for your business when you have a relationship with the people on your list. And a lot of times people find that the whole process of building a strong relationship to be real mystical. Like, how do you actually do that? But what you just said is the number one key thing is listening. And it's no different from having a relationship with, with your neighbor or, someone that you meet physically. You are a lot more interesting when you're interested in someone else, when you listen to them. I'm sure you know people where when you're speaking to them, you can just see in their eyes and you can tell from their body language and their manner that they're just waiting for you to just pause a little bit so they can start talking, because all they want to do is talk, talk, talk. They don't want to listen. And those are generally not the kind of people you have a good relationship with. The people you have a good relationship with are the people that listen to you. And if you want to impress someone, all you have to do is shut up and listen to what they have to say.
All right, you're building up to it. Now you're at launch day.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important thing you have to do the day of the launch? You've got very little money. You've got a relatively small list, but they're active.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important thing?
Well, the most important thing is give them a reason to act now. And this really, it speaks to your positioning, but it also speaks to just the triggers. Like, one of my favorite triggers to use is scarcity. And we mentioned that a little earlier. And this is a very, very powerful one because it speaks to the fear of loss, which is one of the most powerful motivating factors there is, motivating triggers that there is. And so, I'm a big believer because I tend to procrastinate. The thing that gets me to act is a deadline. One of the best ways to do this, like Liz Sherwood, we were just talking about, she said there's only X number of these available. So that's a very powerful incentive to act right away.
And keep in mind, folks, there's a good reason for it.
Right. There has to be a reason why behind that. Now, often it's difficult to build in that kind of scarcity. It was a natural for the market and the product that Liz had. But with a lot of products, it's not really possible or practical to do that, to limit the number you're going to sell. So the flip side of that is I'll pile on either bonuses. They act quickly, they'll get the bonuses, or the price might go up. There might be a discount if they act right away. So I like to pile up, reasons to act immediately. I like to do this both with quantity-based deadlines and time-based deadlines. So, for instance, when I launched Product Launch Formula, the first X number of people, like I mentioned earlier, got a free consultation, I think the first 30 or so.
Okay, and in order to make this a little more concrete for people, what was your reasoning for limiting it that way?
Because, obviously there's a limited number of hours in a day, and I have an extremely busy schedule. So there's just no possible way that I could offer that bonus to everyone.
And when you say that in the sales letter, you increase your credibility immediately with both the people who buy to get that bonus and the people who aren't worried about that bonus.
Mm-hmm.
reason why. Here's another one. You get a time-based discount. One reason, well, I want to introduce it. I want to get it out there. I want to get people talking about it. That's a weak but effective reason why, right? A little bit stronger reason why is, okay, right now you're taking a chance on me because this is not a known commodity in the market. I want to get this out there in some people's hands, get everybody else to see, yeah, it works. I want to get some testimonials, and I'm willing to pay you by reducing the price for taking the chance on this new product. That's much more credible.
Mm-hmm.
So when I introduce things to my list, they always get a discount because I just always give my subscribers a discount.
Mm-hmm.
But I limit it because I don't want to leave the sales letter up there at this discounted price forever. It's a standard reason.
Mm-hmm. Another one I've used, and this is a dangerous one, but one I've used like with a subscription-based product, this is a year subscription, I'm committing to produce this thing for a year, so if I'm going to put in that work, I want to make sure that it's a viable product. You know, that I want to make sure that I'm going to, you know, get enough out of this where I'm going to continue to work for a year. Now, the reason I say that's dangerous is you're introducing a little bit of doubt in their mind. You know, the doubt that, wow, maybe this isn't the greatest product in the world if he's worried that he's going to sell a bunch of them. So there is a little double-edged sword to that one. But I've actually used that one, and it proves fairly effective.
You can take some of that out by saying, you know, I know the product is great, and I know the people who use it are going to benefit from it. But I don't know if there's enough people out there who understand the need for this and the benefit they'll get from it for me to spend a year's time on it. Which is saying exactly what you just said.
Yep.
But with a different phrasing.
Yep. Another one that I've used is, I know this product's going to have a huge impact on your life. I know it's going to, you know, if you buy this product, you're going to attract the love of your life within 30 days. Basically, the quicker you act on this, the quicker it will impact your life. I want to have this impact on your life. I want to impact as many people as quickly as possible. And I know a lot of people tend to procrastinate. It's easier to put off this kind of decision. So I'm going to incent you to act right away because I want to impact your life and I want to impact it quickly. So for the next 48 hours, it's this price. Or for the next 48 hours, you get these extra bonuses.
Yeah, you have to be really careful with that's a market-specific type of thing. That'll work real well in certain markets.
Mm-hmm.
If you tried that in the internet marketing field, everybody would look at you and say, you're out of your mind. This guy is full of baloney. It's not a touchy-feely market.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't believe that. Now, if you say, you could turn that same thing around. Now, if you did that in a dating market and you had developed that type of rapport with people, what's the woman's name that you were working with? Well, you don't have to mention her name.
Mm-hmm.
That woman you were working with that was involved in the relationship
yep.
products, she has that kind of rapport with her people because mm-hmm. that's the kind of person she is, and they know that. If I were going to say something like that, and I phrased it the way you just did, people would laugh at me.
I used it, Paul. I used it in product.
You're not me.
I used it in product launch for you.
Yeah, but you're not me. You are known to be a much kinder, gentler person than me. Let's remember the whole reputation thing.
Yeah. I also did it I did it in a PDF report. I did it about on page 28 of Varian. That was my back to the wall report.
There's also the fact that, I mean, people who know, you're in a position where you can afford to actually mean that.
Yeah.
And you're a kinder, gentler marketer than me. If I went out and told people that. Now, if I said to people, look, I'm going to give you a chance to get this cheaper. I'm not going to leave it cheap forever. But for those of you who don't have the money or who don't want to spend the money right now, if you're willing to get off your butt, I'm willing to give you a break for the next 2 weeks. Other than that, after that, you can forget about it. But I really want to see people using this and making money with it. People would believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same statement. Folks, when you think about these sort of reasons why, it's as much how you say it as it is what you say.
I'll give you a great example of that. One of the reasons why, essentially, boiled down, that I did for a launch, actually I've done this a couple times, is I want to make a lot of money fast. That was the real reason. But the way it was said was, today's April 13th, and I just met with my tax advisor, and he told me that I owe a huge amount of money. So I need to raise money fast. Today's the 13th. On the 15th, I'm going to write a check to the IRS. I know they can't cash it until at least the 16th. So between now and the 16th, I'm putting this product on sale. And you can get these huge savings just because I need to raise money to pay my tax bill. That was a very effective reason why, a very effective promotion that I did.
It's believable. Yeah. How many people haven't been in that position at some point?
I've been in it too many times.
I've been there.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a very similar thing, and I told people, it's exactly what happened. I screwed up in the bookkeeping. Actually, I didn't screw up in the bookkeeping. I just procrastinated things.
Yep.
And I goofed, and I had to fix it. My mistake. Don't argue with it.
My mistake, and you win because of my mistake.
And it really was. It was my mistake. Period. And so I came up with something that I thought was just an absolute no-brainer to deal with it, and dealt with it, getting huge amounts of fan mail over it. So that's the other thing. People don't care why. As long as your reason why is believable and they understand the motivation, they don't really care what the reason why is, as long as the deal is that good. Don't lie to them. If you just say, okay, I want to see if I sell more at this price, that's fine. If you come out with a false statement, I want to test the lower price and see, does this make a difference in sales? That's fine. If that's all you want to do, if that's your real reason why, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, okay, I want to hit, X number of sales, and then I'm going to raise the price, because I know it's a great product, but, I'm one of these insecure people who just really isn't convinced that it's worth $997, so I'm going to give it to you for $297 until I sell X number, which is when I'll believe it. If that's the truth, tell that story. People respect that. They don't have to think your reason why is some sort of compelling thing. That only works with your real hardcore fans.
Mm-hmm.
If it's more than $20, they got to be real hardcore fans to spend money just because you've got a problem. Tell them the truth. Come up and make it entertaining. Position it properly. Phrase it so it's not insulting to them or you. And just do it.
Right.
I sent something out to people and I said, you can pay me whatever price you want for this. I had people spend $97 and people spend $1. Didn't matter to me. And I told them up front, whatever price you think they're worth. I didn't care. I wanted to see what people would do. I had three of each. $3.97, three at $1. Almost everybody else was in the $20 to $50 range.
Mm-hmm.
That was my reason. I wanted to see what they do. I didn't have a single person complain about it. I had a whole bunch of people asking me dumb questions. Like, what are you up to? What are you really up to? Is this some sort of market research? Yeah, I said, I want to see what you're going to do. That's the funniest thing. If you tell people the unadulterated truth, they will wonder what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
They are so trained not to trust marketers and sales pitches. If you constantly tell people the truth, they will wonder what the hell you're up to.
Right. It's a huge competitive advantage.
Yeah, and it's great. And who's going to try and beat you? How are they going to outcompete? You're totally transparent. And that builds the relationship because people don't feel it. The biggest thing that kills relationships is people feeling like they can't trust the other person. There's some distance there. If you just avoid creating problems, don't insult them. Unless the people who are going to be insulted are people you want to leave anyway. In which case, fine, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain people I don't want on my list, and I will say things actively hoping to get them to unsubscribe if they're there. If you treat these people with respect, and it doesn't have to be this slovenly, dear sir, psychophant garbage. Treat them with the respect of talking to them like an adult. Treat them like clients instead of customers. You are responsible for their well-being to the extent that the information you give them or the products you give them work and do what they want them to do. Just don't create problems, and your personality will take care of the rest. Be yourself. Always, always, always be yourself. That's 90% of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So you roll out the product. success you've had on the final day. You ask people to do something, you give them a reason to do it right now. If you're smart, you do at least one, probably three or four follow-ups pointing out, the initial 20 or 30 consultations with me are gone, but, you still got all this other stuff, and then you've got to see the responses that are coming back from people. You do some follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a little secret here. This is an open secret. Every marketer who's tested it knows it. 25% of your sales on most offers to your list will come from the first time you present the offer. The next two or three will generate the other 75%. If you send something out to your list once and stop, if they're interested in it, if you get a reasonable number of sales, you send it out once and stop, you've just robbed yourself of 75% of your profits. That may not work out that way for the big launches. Then again, Nate, what's your experience?
My experience is that you can take your sales. Let's say we're doing a 7-day launch, which I really like 7-day launches. You can take your sales in the first day and double them, and that's what you will sell in the week. And that's typically, you're following up almost every day during that week. And then the way further to break it out is that 50% will come on that first day, 25% will come in days like 2 through 6, and on the 7th day you'll get 25% of them.
I've been looking at this from the perspective with those numbers of, let's say, I have a product, I don't do the launch build-up, and most of the people who have lists that are promoting products to them don't really do the build-up. Essentially, you're compressing the first, second, and third emails in before they can buy.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Learning something here. New perspective. No new facts, but new perspective.
Yeah. And in fact, you can take the sales in the first hour, double those, and that's probably what you'll see in the first day. So you take the sales in the first hour and quadruple them, and that's probably what you'll see in the first week. And of course, these are all rough.
Have you ever done 2 emails on launch day?
Oh yeah. Because
what does that do to your response rate?
Well, the first email is generally right at launch time. Although sometimes I'll send it out a few hours before launch. In fact, I conclude this one just killer email in my course that's part of the SWIFT file that I encourage people to use. That's like I sent out like a half hour ago. I don't want to give away too much because it's just got some great psychology in it. But typically I'll send one right at launch, right telling the site's live. And then later that day, I'll usually send out something that generally revolves around turning lemons into lemonade type of thing. Because usually I'll find some during the launch day where something didn't go just perfect. And I'll send them an email that will be basically along the lines of, boy, things are just going so crazy. Barely able to keep up with things. We're getting orders coming in. The phone's ringing off the hook. And we're just, if you sent a question or if you've, called us and we haven't responded, we're sorry. We're just trying to keep our heads above water. And it's sort of like we're all in this together. I'm getting carried along this thing. I'm barely able to stay in control because this is just so chaotic. There's such a huge response. And usually that'll go out the evening of the launch day. And it's funny how I don't ever have to make something up because there's always something happens that justifies sending that email.
I can actually see someone just saying, I am so excited. You should see how things are going here.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going well, you say, you're going to be excited.
Yeah.
And that can be all the reminder people want because a lot of times people want to be involved in that type of
thing. Oh, yeah. Well, see, excitement breeds excitement.
Yeah. I mean, and the interesting thing is 99% of the psychological effect of what we're talking about here, folks, is positioning. It's how you frame what's going on. You do not want to get caught. You can make mistakes. You can screw up and people will forgive you if you're honest about it. And when you get into business or when you get selling more, you will screw up and you will make some big doozy ones.
And I'll go a step further, and I embrace them. Unless it's just a terrible error in judgment. If it's any type of an oops type of thing, I embrace those because people love to see that. That means you're real, that you're human. And I'll tell them about those every single time. It just goes so far towards building a relationship. It's just amazing.
Yeah, people will always forgive an honest mistake. Well, most people. There's always going to be the person out there who just, everything has to be perfect.
And you don't want them as clients, and you don't want them on your list.
Right, that's where you give them their money back.
And you invite them to unsubscribe.
Yes, the unsolicited unsubscribe award. You run into the problems, that's a great reason to contact people again.
Absolutely.
Which is the point.
Yep.
You're making.
Yep.
So now we're past that. You're into the maintenance phase as far as dealing with your list.
Mm-hmm.
What's your next move for going outside of that group?
Well, if you do this right, you will attract the attention of, at this point, we haven't talked about partners at all, but you will attract, first of all, you want to over deliver, just continue to do some follow up and just give them a little bit of extra stuff and you'll create raving fans. And, that's a big, long topic I don't want to get into. But all you have to do is deliver a few extra bonuses that you didn't promise them, and you will have raving fans. It's not hard to do. If you do this right, you'll actually attract partners. You'll attract people that will want to promote your product. And once you do that, that's sort of the keys to the kingdom, because you can do a lot with your list, but if you start to expand to other people's lists, then you take this whole thing and put it into overdrive. What you can do then is start to do this type of rollout, but for other people's lists. And you can stagger it. You can say, this week I'm going to do this person's list, and next week I'm going to do a different person's list, or you can combine them together. But basically, you can just repeat the process over. And you're probably going to have to tweak it. You're always going to have to remember that, some of the people that have already bought from you are going to be on this other list. So you don't want to be giving a better deal down the road. You always have to, I just obsess about this, the fact that, who's ever bought from me, I always do right by them. And someone coming down the road in the future, they're not going to get a better deal. They're not going to get something else. Always be in integrity in your relationship with the people that have already bought from you. But you can then take this and roll it out to other people's lists. A lot of times, if you do the launch right, they'll just show up, they'll start emailing you or writing you or calling you, telling you they want to promote. But even if they don't, you can go to them and you now have a history of, wow, look at what I did when I launched to my list. And I put together this process and I did this launch and we brought in all this money. And how about if we do this with your list and, I give you half the profits. And, this is the kind of money I made for each person that was on my list. And I can't promise that for your list, but, this is our track record at this point. And then you can basically just, go list to list and start to repeat this process.
That's the joint venture end, and that's a really important, that's a way to make a lot of money fast.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, and there's nothing wrong with that, folks. In terms of the long-term building,
so
how would you go about developing affiliates from this overall base that you've now built between your own promotions and your joint ventures?
Well, it's really similar to what I just said with joint ventures. Basically, if you come out with a good launch, you've got the instant momentum, and you've got mind share, you've got market share, and, I'm actually getting ready to do this with my product launch formula, and the way I'm going to roll it out is first to my customers, because a lot of my customers want to promote my product. And like I said, I always want to take care of my customers. So this is just one extra way I can take care of them, is I'm going to give them a head start in terms of being affiliates. For the first, I don't know how long, week or 2 weeks, the only people that can be affiliates are my customers. Next, I'm going to roll it out to my list. So I have the biggest loyalty, my customers. My next level of loyalty is the people on my list. So I'll roll it out to them. And after that, then I'll go to some of the joint venture partners, the people that specialize in attracting affiliates. And there's people that have lists of people that want to be affiliates. And I'll go to them and I'll do a rollout with them. And of course, when I do these rollouts, I'll have some type of special promotion in place. In fact, I'm planning on doing a whole relaunch for this product what I did was I went and did case studies with all these people that bought from me that have had great launches. So we've got all these case studies. I've done phone interviews with them. We're going to do transcripts. We're going to end up with, you know, 12 hours of audio and hundreds of pages of transcripts. And that will set up a relaunch. It'll be a special bonus that people will get if they buy during the relaunch. And if I pull off everything as I plan, that relaunch will be coincided with launching the affiliate program. So I'm going to come out with a bunch of new affiliates promoting, and at the same time they're going to have a new package to promote, which is a special bonus that's only going to be available for, you know, a limited amount of time. And so, I mean, that's the way I'm rolling it out. It's always turning it into an event. So I'm staging this rollout of the affiliate program, turning that into an event. You know, okay, you guys are my customers. You're my favorite people in the world. I'm going to give you 1 week head start on everyone. Well, if I'm giving them a 1 week head start, what am I doing? I'm incenting them to act in that week. I'm giving them a reason why to act. I'm making it an event. I'm getting, you know, here's a special bonus you get is this 1 week to act. Well, what's that going to do? It's going to push them to act. So I guess the overall thing is, like you just mentioned, positioning, but it's always looking for a way to turn things into an event, give people a reason to act now.
Now, one thing that you mentioned, the concern for putting your customers first, that's absolutely something that I consider to be very important. There are really effective ways where someone can get a better deal by buying through somebody else, for example, that are not offensive to anyone. Let's say, for example, I was going to do a promotion for Liz Machine. And I call up, let's say, Jason Potash, who's going to be promoting it as an affiliate or a joint venture partner. And I pick Jason because he has Liz-related product and has a lot of experience. I could go to Jason and say, hey, would you like to do a conference call, which you can then give as a bonus to people who buy through your affiliate link? And that makes perfect sense. No one is offended by that. But they're getting something through Jason that they didn't get through me.
Mm-hmm. But even in that case, I would try to talk Jason into letting me give that to all my people who have already bought from me.
Oh, I always try to do that. But some people won't do it.
Right.
There are people out there who every word that comes out of their mouth that's recorded is theirs, period. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. I generally don't deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't object to it. It's fine. Bill Wiley is famous for giving people something extra if they buy through his affiliate link.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first one I saw do this. And it's always something specifically related to the same field that the product they're buying covers. Look for ways to give your affiliates an edge that doesn't hurt or offend your customers or your other affiliates. There are people who disagree with that, and I'm not going to say that they're wrong. This is just how I prefer to do things. I like to give everybody as much of an edge as they can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the key, is just don't go off half-cocked on these things. I mean, just spend a little bit of time thinking it through and know that people who've already bought from you are some of them are going to hear about the promotion and, you know, and think about the repercussions. Just, you know, how are they going to feel?
Right. If the guy on the other end is giving something extra that you didn't, okay. I mean, you try and get it for your customers if you can, but it may not be in their best interest to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Your customers will understand that. That's somebody else doing something extra. Like you said, think about it. Know what the impact is going to be. Let's say you're somebody who's got an existing product. Okay, I came out with List Machine years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't done anything with it in years. Literally nothing. It's sitting there. The bonuses suck. They were good when they first came out, but the book is worth it, I think. So I got to relaunch this thing. Just in generic terms, I'm not asking for free consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, I already have a plan for it. But just for generic terms, what would you say to someone who's got a product that's either gone a little stale, the sales are down, they just haven't promoted it, or sales are fine and growing, but they want to really kick it up another notch. Is there anything that people need to do that's different in relaunching a product from the basic launch form?
Well, when you're relaunching it, when you're launching a new product, it's a de facto event. Something new is happening, and you have some level of an event to build on. So when you're relaunching it, the key is looking for the reason why. Why is this going to be an event? You know, for you, I mean, List Machine is sort of, it's a classic. It's been around for a long time. It's very,
one of the few books on list building that's actually evergreen.
Yeah.
Technology dependent.
It's highly regarded. It's got great testimonials. And it's been there. It's like an icon. So, I mean, just coming out with a new version, it will be an event. It has to be. There's just no two ways about it. You're gonna be able to get all kinds of, very highly respected people to come out and promote it and say good things about it. It's basically, you're looking for a reason why it's an event again. And it could be new bonuses, new case studies, new testimonials, new pricing, anything like that. And then
let's take one where, let's say the product was a flop initially.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has a product that was either okay or poorly reviewed, and it was a flop.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do to relaunch that?
I mean, again, it's the same thing. You're looking for, I mean, it could be, you could celebrate. It could be, you could celebrate the idea of it being a flop. So, like, this is a great product, but I just had a terrible name for it, and so I'm renaming it, and I'm adding on all these sections, and I've added on these extra bonuses. And we're going to make this thing go this time. It could be a limited time half price deal, a relaunch half price because one of those reasons that we gave before, all those reasons why. It could be, like I said, case studies. It could be a new bonus package. It could be a new gold level. We just came out, we doubled the size of this package, and it's going to be the gold level. And it used to cost $27. We're going to keep that $27 version, but there's also going to be a $77 gold version. But if you buy this week, you get the gold version for the $27 price. Any type of...
I love that one.
There
you're upgrading, you can get it for the old price first.
Mm-hmm.
And people love that because, I mean, List Machine, for example, thousands of copies at the same price. If I suddenly start adding stuff in and leave it at that price,
mm-hmm.
or if I add a bunch of stuff in, literally the price should go up.
Right.
It's the same thing with any other product. If it's been selling for X amount of money,
right.
And you're going to add stuff, and you say, well, we're going to keep the price where it is for now, that's a great tactic.
Yep.
Everybody wins.
Yep.
I like these ones that say, I should raise the price, I will raise the price, I'm just not sure when and how much.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know how effective it is, but I love the honesty to it.
Or we're raising the price next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. See, what's interesting is I find the people who say we're going to raise the price, but we're not sure when and how much,
mm-hmm.
are more likely to raise the price significantly than the people who say we're going to be raising the price to $97 soon.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't buy by midnight, you lose out on the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that applies across the market or if it's just, been my experience. Unless they have a track record.
Right. And that's one thing we didn't touch on, which we should, is if you do these launches right, they have a cumulative effect, especially if you do give people the reason to act now, and then you follow through on what you say you're going to do. The next time you do a launch, you've trained your list to jump. When you tell your list to jump, and then they're either rewarded or not rewarded, whether they jump or not, so the next time you tell them to jump, they'll be much more inclined to jump.
For years, I didn't have a single promotion where I said, when it gets to this, the price is going up or it's no longer available, where I didn't hit that mark. All of a sudden, I said one day, what? I'm going to tell them 200 and it's only going to be 100. Didn't tell anybody that, but it disappeared really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I had people emailing me, can I get this? No, I already changed the sales letter. I never told them I sold the 200, and I won't, but that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, no, I already changed the sales letter. In my mind, what that does is reinforces to people, because I had too many people pestering me and playing games, trying to get me to break that deal. Ain't happening. So I finally figured the way to do it is to hit it so fast that they're all wondering what happened. And it actually reinforces the, like you said, I don't think about it as training people to jump, but it's like, you better believe me if I tell you it's going away on such and such a date. And I've noticed you do that. John does that. The very few times that I've seen Ralph do a deadline offer, he does it. people believe you when you, once you develop that track record. And it's interesting that your joint venture partners, people will approach you and trust you if they see that you're telling the truth about your deadline. But if you lie about a deadline, that'll mess you up as far as getting joint venture partners and affiliates too.
Right.
Anyway, it's getting kind of late.
It is.
Great. For those who, aren't on this call, which is just me and Jeff, it is 2:24 a.m. in my location and 1:24 a.m. in Jeff's location. Or no, actually it's 12:24.
Right, yeah.
So it's still, it's late and Jeff's been out skiing all day. He's trying to make me hate his children because they can do the double black diamond things. You know, I could injure myself on the lift ride up to the top. So if there was one thing that people needed to understand in the process of creating and launching a product on a low budget, you'll notice, folks, nothing we talked about here costs much money. We spent the $20 a month. We haven't touched the $200. If there was one thing or one concept that people really needed to understand and that you, if they could only keep one thing, but they would keep it and use it, what would it be?
You know, I've hit on a few things. The thing I keep on hitting on over and over is listen to your market. Listen to your people. So I don't want to give you that one because I've hit that one over and over. So the one other thing
I found that enough for him anyway.
Yeah, is momentum. You want momentum in your marketing. You want to be continually increasing your momentum. You want to come out of the gate with a product that you know is good, with a promotion that gets people excited and gets them to move quickly. And once you get that momentum going, you create fans, you create sales, you attract joint venture partners, you attract affiliate partners, you attract people that want to create content for you, you attract raving fans that'll go on the boards, on the bulletin boards and say good things about you. You attract people that will want to work for you for free. It's just on and on, but it's all about momentum. You know, and you do that with your marketing by creating that product that your market wants and putting together, you know, one of these sequences, which is a term I don't think I've used that so far, but a sequence of, you know, it's very key, a marketing sequence that gets people excited, that gets them involved, that gets them bought into the process, that makes them root for you. And you put together that kind of sequence and you come blasting out the door with instant momentum. Nothing can get in your way at that point. So
people love to be associated with success.
Right. Right.
We could probably go on for another 3 hours, but I don't think that would be a good idea. people would get tired of listening to me and then, you know, then they stop listening to you because I wore them out. So anyway, I really appreciate your time with us, Jeff, and I want to remind people the URL for that. That's productlaunchformula.com. The numbers that you're hearing here, you'll notice when we mention numbers, we put names with them. Frank Kern really did do $370,000. I think, is that the right number?
Yeah, actually he did $480,000.
But he had to give a bunch of it back.
Yeah, because he said he was only
selling, what, 37 seats at 10,000
each? Yeah, and he sold 48 before he could take down the sales letter. So he refunded $110,000.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and John Reese really did do over $1 million in one day.
Yep.
And Jeff has done very well with his. Liz Sherwood, $58,000 in, what, 30 hours, you said?
Yep.
Okay. Per month.
Yep.
So these kinds of numbers are real. You notice these are names of real people that you can hunt down, and there's no mystery here. We're not making this stuff up. And there are lots of stories like this.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them in this market and in many others, either Jeff's been involved or somebody he's trained has been involved. So now if you're new, you may want to take the information you're hearing here. Build a product, get it out the market, start making some money. If you've got any experience and you've got a business going, I really recommend getting a copy of Product Launch Formula. This is a killer. Not only that, looking at it is a great lesson in packaging. Seriously, there's a great bug factor, and there's real value in each part of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. That was great. if people want to take a look at sequence and relationship building,
6and7.com.
Yeah. It's, there's a whole story behind that one that I've actually never really told, but, it's my list where eventually you'll get pitched some if you stick with it long enough, but it takes about 2 months before I'll try to pitch something.
Oh, and it's not painful anyway.
Right.
Lucas.
Right.
Again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I have learned a few things that are useful to me. I'm hoping that everybody else is